Blog Talk Radio.
There's no earthly way of knowing
keep singing.
Which direction we are going. There's no knowing where we're rowing, or which way the river's flowing. Is it raining? Is it snowing? Is a hurricane a blowing? Not a speck of light is showing, so the danger must be growing. Are the fires of hell aglowing? Is the grisly reaper mowing? Yes! The danger must be growing, for the rowers keep on rowing, and they're certainly not showing any signs that they are slowing!
Hello and welcome. Welcome to Tipping Point. I am Stephen Platinum, joined by Larry Goodman. Miss Rachel isn't here yet, but she's going to join us later on in the show. Larry, we're four shows in, and we're already breaking the format tonight. What do you think about that?
Oh, I like change. This is wonderful.
Well, speaking of change, we're going to, instead of usually we kind of talk shop for a little while about the Georgia scene or about the national wrestling scene, but, you know, Paul Adams being on, an article that you wrote about the Tennessee wrestling scene sparked a bit of controversy, and Brian Logan has asked for time. Do you want to tell us a little bit about Brian Logan and what you wrote, Larry?
Well, Brian was brought in to edit the replacement for Southeastern for Knoxville TV when Marquez's operation stopped filming, and then they put on Championship Wrestling from Hollywood in its place, and the local TV station wasn't on board. Well, they were initially on board, but they didn't really like, of course, getting a not having a local product. So
right.
They made a deal with Chris Lash, who's a long-term radio guy, to do a TV show, and Chris Lash brought in Brian Logan to be his head of production. And long story short, the final Marquez taping in Knoxville in November with Jim Cornette was at, none of the 4 weeks from that show ever aired due to a dispute with the editor, and it now appears that 6 weeks that were shot, the first 6 weeks that were shot for Chris Lash with Brian Logan editing, or was going to edit, that none of that's ever going to air and is still in Brian Logan's hands. So maybe he can fill us in on exactly how that all came about.
Well, that sounds like a recipe for a very, very interesting discussion with Brian Logan. Do you want to go ahead and introduce him, Larry? Is he ready to go?
I will when he gets here.
Okay. So he's not ready yet. You know, it's interesting. I don't think I've seen this kind of reaction to somebody that we were going to have on before. More than one wrestler contacted me, some wanting kind of equal time to rebut whatever Brian was going to say, even though he hasn't said anything yet, and a bunch of other people who sent in all this information. I can't wait to hear from Brian himself. He's got a very interesting history, Larry. Did you want to talk about that a little bit? I mean, he's put out a book and all kinds of stuff, right?
Yeah, he wrote a book on his career. He was involved in a famous or infamous incident, which is available on YouTube, where he was in a cage match with Lance Erickson in Oak Hill, West Virginia, and there was something going on with a female fan at ringside, which you can't really see on camera, but something, he says that the fan attacked his manager. He jumped out of the cage and attacked the female fan and, you know, knocked her down and wound up spending time in prison for that.
Wow.
You can check it out on YouTube. If you look, it's there. It's a little grainy, but the footage is there. He also, was shot in the back by his dad. The story goes that his dad had a stroke and, lost his sanity, and came out firing pistols in the house, and Brian knocked his mom out of the way and took five bullets in his back, one of them which is still lodged in his spine. He was also once the AWA world champion towards the tail end of, you know, one of the last vestiges of AWA
wow.
wrestling. He was also one half of the Disciples of Sin in OVW, managed by Mr. Jim Cornette's wife, Sin, for a period of time. Started out as a wrestler for Jim Cornette in Smoky Mountain Wrestling. So he's been around the wrestling scene for a long time.
Yeah, when I sort of threw Brian's name out there with friends of mine, everybody knew who he was. You know, some people said, oh, the Smoky Mountain guy. Some people said the OVW guy. So his is one of those names that's just always around the scene and seems to inspire great passion for or against. So I can't wait to talk to him, hoping we get a chance to do that.
Yes, a polarizing character, it would appear. And his book is available on Amazon for those who are interested. We'll do a little plug for him here before he gets on the air. It's called Worker, Last of a Dying Breed, and can be purchased on Amazon.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that sounds fantastic. While we're waiting for Brian to come on, though, tell me, Larry, about the AWE show. Your review was pretty stellar. It sounds like the atmosphere of that place was off the charts great.
Yeah, you said it. It really was. They could not have done it better for a bar show on a Thursday night, I don't think. I think they hit all the right notes with that crowd on that night. It went over great. It really did, because I thought, oh boy, they're going to lose these people if this drags at all. These are the kind of fans that are going to start heading for the door and losing interest, and that never happened because they kept it moving, they kept it entertaining, they kept it funny, and gave people really good wrestling at the end that caught people's attention. It's like, oh yeah, man, these guys are beating the hell out of each other in here, and giving them a good athletic match. So yeah. Hats off to Josh Wheeler. It's great to see him have and Murder to have this kind of success.
Did they announce the next date for that venue?
Yeah, it's going to be a Friday in March. I believe it's the 13th, which is going to be a combination show, AWE, Monstrosity, and the new female wrestling, Roar, which I'm gathering is Amber O'Neill Gallows and other folks. I believe that Priscilla Kelly may have her first match that night.
Oh, boy. Well, that's definitely something to look out for. Another league kind of coming on. It seems to be kind of almost the salad days for Georgia wrestling promotions as of late.
Doesn't
a bunch
it?
Of them doing very well. Mm-hmm. I think so. I think, you know, Peach State has found their legs again. Anarchy, I think it's got a little bit of a shot in the arm with Charles Anschutz, who's going to be a guest later on today. Oh, but I didn't even talk about our other guests. We're going to have Charles Anschutz, the owner of Southern Fried Championship Wrestling and Anarchy Wrestling. He is going to be on, and then we're going to have another super promoter, Shane Knowles, who promotes Peach State Wrestling Alliance. He's going to be on at the about the half-hour mark, and I wanted to do a promoter show because often, you know, the promoter is one of those things that I think gets overlooked. People, of course, acknowledge wrestlers. Bookers at this stage in the game are – their importance is sort of trumpeted and how important it is. But, man, that promoter game, that's the job. It's kind of like being a stage manager for a theater company. Stage managers don't get a lot of attention. It's the actors, it's the directors, but the people who actually are responsible for getting butts in the seats and making sure the trains run on time. That is an incredibly, incredibly difficult job. Even guys who are kind of very smart men and renowned bookers, like take, say, Bill Behrens. Bill Behrens will be the first guy to tell you that he is not a promoter. You know, that's just something that doesn't come naturally to him. And I kind of fall into that category as well. Promotion is a difficult part of the game. So we're having two of the best on. Charles won, didn't he, for Promoter of the Year? And I believe Shane Knowles was runner-up. Is that correct?
I believe that's correct. I believe that's accurate. Yes, yes. I'm curious what possesses anybody to want to get involved in wrestling promotion, as difficult of a task as it is. And I guess we'll get to find out from these guys what got them into it, why.
Yeah. Yeah, and both of them hold sort of a unique thing in that they are part of promotions where the jobs are clearly delineated between promoter and booker. So Charles has sort of dabbled in that stuff. Shane Knowles, no doubt, has had an influence in the booking in Peach State. They have guys who do that part of the job for them, so they're able to, you know, focus on the promoting. And I think the results speak for themselves. Whereas you guys had guys like me who did both, and it's a yeoman's task. I think it's one of the things that Heyman, as much credit as he gets for a lot of the great stuff at ECW, that's the one part that I think he really deserves the credit for, is the promotional aspect, how he kind of created this brand and learned to push the brand above individual wrestlers, which is something we see really to this day. That, you know, for the most part, you're a WWE fan. You know, it's the league that they chant, not the wrestlers themselves. And that's you know, testament to Heyman as a booker and a promoter, I think. So
Totally agree. He was tremendous at that.
Where are you going this weekend, Larry? Are you going to see a wrestling show?
This is a toss-up for me between the shows being run by our guests. They're either going to be at
Peach
State or going to be at Southern Fried, and they're both really appealing, and I just can't figure out which way to go, you know.
Maybe they need to promote. They need to work for it a little bit. The first ever reality competition between wrestling promoters to see who can get Larry Goodman to go to their show. That's interesting. So it's between Southern Fry and Peach State, eh? PCW. I will say this: PCW has the greatest poster of the three. The guy who's done our posters since West has stopped doing them. Just a real different style, and he's experimenting, trying stuff out. So the latest wrestling poster looks like an old style video game, and so it's like this sort of like 8-bit, like Super Nintendo looking graphics, and that stuff thrown into the mix. I really like it a lot. It's very PCW. We've always kind of changed up the poster style. That's one of those little promotional things. Whereas I think Shane Knowles and Charles are of the mind of, you know, you kind of stick with one thing, and clearly that has worked for them. But yeah, I mean, those are two great shows to choose from. What's the main of Peach State? Do you remember?
You know, off the top of my head, I do not. But you know, we have all of these things on gwhnewsandnotes.blogspot.com, so it's really like no problem at all to tell you that the main event is, oh yeah, Tyson Dean defending against Johnny Swinger for the title.
Okay.
And Rave versus Fry Daddy, and Ace Haven defending the junior title against Jeremy Foster. So I'll say on paper, the Southern Fried Show is deeper. They're both interesting, but they had a deeper lineup.
Southern Fried's main, of course, is the Georgia versus Florida, right, in the cage.
Yes.
The six-man
yes.
cage.
They'll have to go a ways to top the last time, but I wouldn't put it past them to be able to do it.
I noticed, I see that in Vintage Wrestling, that Simon Says won their title, won the Vintage title from Chiazzo in a very emotional match that they had last Sunday. They did their show on Sunday in front of what looked to be a very big crowd in the pictures. here in Florida. So, I mean, Simon Says is Ryan and High and Chiazzo and all those guys. So, you know, that's going to be a great match at Southern Fried. I guess Brian Logan, snooze you lose. But do we have Charles ready to go by chance?
You know, possibly. I'm checking the switchboard here. And
okay.
To see who we have. Yeah, I don't see Brian. Well.
Maybe he needs to borrow a phone from Wolfie D. That is a very inside reference, which we'll reveal to you guys possibly later in the show.
Oh, we'll definitely reveal it if he doesn't make it on the air here. If he doesn't show, I mean.
If Brian doesn't call in, the Wolfie D borrowing story must be told.
Let me see if I can raise up Brian Logan before we move on.
Okay. And while Larry's trying to do that.
Ah, we have him. Oh. Maybe that drew him out of the.
Well, if you want to go ahead and cue him up and introduce him, Larry, I'd
yes,
love
I
to
will.
Hear.
I'd like to welcome to the Tipping Point, former AWA World Champion, former one half of Disciples of Sin, former editor of GAW Television, Brian Logan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. How is everybody?
We're doing great,
fine.
Brian.
Brian, I gave some background on the story in our opening segment, so if we could just dive right in here to how you got involved in Great American Wrestling and what transpired that ended up with no television airing from the taping you were a production guy for.
Well, about a week before the taping was scheduled, I was contacted by Lance Erickson, and he said that I needed to give this guy, Troy Lowe, a call. So I called Troy Lowe, and he had explained to me the deal that they had with Dave Marquez with Southeastern Wrestling, and that basically Dave Marquez stole a bunch of money, was basically charging them an outrageous amount to film the TV, send it from Knoxville to California, and then edit it, do everything for them, and then send it back, and that Marquez was actually paying Doug Wood at Foxville 43, who is the cameraman there, who filmed it for him and all that, and that basically everything had fell apart, and they were looking for someone to fill the shoes of not only Doug Wood, because Doug was upset that he didn't get the money that he was promised from the last taping, which explains where the last episodes of Southeastern went, because Doug didn't get paid, so he kept those tapes. Then Chris Lash had came into the picture somehow. I don't know if he was the promoter for Southeastern or not, but they had fell out with Marquez. And so Troy went on and told me this horror story and asked if I could help. And I had told them that, yes, I could help, but I couldn't do anything until mid-April because, you know, I have my own business, Logan's World TV, and we have several projects set up, and that I couldn't come on board full-time until then. Well, that was fine. About, I don't know, a few hours later, it was called back and said, well, Doug Wood has thrown a fit, and basically he's quit, and he's mad that we found someone else. It was one of those deals where, you know, the camera guy was like, well, good luck finding somebody for this amount of money. So he said, well, he's refusing to completely edit the whole thing. And I said, well, I could probably fit it in and get the shows edited for you and do that until I can completely take over. So that was the deal. And then basically a few hours after that, I got another phone call And they said, well, Doug's got mad, and he's completely quit. And so now we've got a taping Saturday. What can you do? And I said, well, you know, I've got a bunch of conventions set up that we're, you know, plugging our Logan's World TV thing. And, you know, I really don't have time to do this. And they were like, what can you do? And I said, well, the only way that I can do this is if we go in there and do the first taping and tape a whole bunch of episodes. And the first week, I turn them all over within 3 or 4 days. And then we come back and do the second taping in February and do the exact same thing. And that way it can buy some time where I'm going to be gone in March doing comic conventions in Lexington and Charlotte and some of these other places. And so they said, okay, well, that's what we'll do. So get to the Thursday, Friday, and Troy Lowe had wrote these storylines. And, you know, he has a comic book background, and he's a good guy, and I like him. But he's never written wrestling TV. So I was kind of coaxing him along and explaining, you know, you got to have times. You got to know where the commercials are. You got to know everything. You got to tell these guys exactly everything. And he couldn't get the concept fully. And that's not his fault. It's he just had no experience in it. So I had ended up going as far as making like this dummy sheet. You know, I wrote the greatest Raw ever for him so he could see what a template would look like. And he never wrote the times down. He never got all this stuff done. So I kept telling him, you know, that we're going to get there and this is going to be a disaster because no one's going to know what to do. So we get there the night of the show. They had set up the night before. I bring my equipment in. And, you know, they had all the pipe and the drapes and all this stuff, and they already had everything set up. And the boys were late. We were supposed to do pre-tapes, but the boys weren't there because they had told them the wrong time. So half the interviews weren't able to be taped. Then we had all these matches, which all had to be rewritten by us and put times in. So we were all hectic getting everything going, but we got through it. And we taped 6 weeks of TV. And, you know, you never tape 6 weeks of TV, but the reason we were doing it was because they were in a bind. So I had made it perfectly clear to Troy, to Chris Lash, to the girl at the TV station, the manager of the TV station, you know, hey, I'm shooting this haunted Lawrence Burke movie in February. Then I've got my convention tour. You know, I have to get this edited. You will have the first 6 episodes Thursday because I have to get this done. So the day after, Saturday night, I talked to Chris Lash on Facebook till about 2 in the morning, and I told him, I said, you know, this isn't perfect. It's not a perfect scenario. There's a lot of bugs that need to be worked out. And there needs to be a lot of movie magic added to this to make this look good. He said, fine, do it. So the next morning, 6 a.m., he starts Facebooking me again. Get up and start working on it. Okay, no problem. So I got up and started making some rough edits. Well, part of the deal was is that I had offered for Troy and Chris to come over and sit here and help edit. But I was putting together some rough edits so that when they got here on Monday, they had something to look at. Well, I made an opener, and they didn't like it. They didn't like the shade of white that was in the graphics of the words, the text, the logo, the thing. And they spent 3.5 hours arguing over the shade of white. Then finally, I was like, well, tell me specifically what you wanted. So Chris sent this thing that was this big WWE-style logo. And I said, well, that's great, but I can't do that. I can't do CGI. It had the logo flying in and spinning around and bursting into flames, and then you go down to the ring and it spins around and all this other stuff. And I said, that's great, but I can't do it. He's like, well, I'll get you a template. And I said, well, okay, that's fine, but you got to get the template to me. So meanwhile, we're 5 hours into this. Nothing's getting edited. So finally, everybody starts, you know, talking back and forth. So I just end up getting off the phone and just put the first episode together. So they're supposed to come over the next day, and Troy gets sick, and he was legitimately sick but couldn't come over. So Chris then said he was coming over, but then decided he wasn't. So I said, look, you know, he had asked me to put the first episode on YouTube so he could look at it wherever he was at. So, you know, anybody who has put anything on YouTube, if you edit it, you have to share it, render it, and get it out of the computer in order to get it onto YouTube. Well, when I told him I was rendering the first episode, he went crazy. Why are you rendering anything without me here? And I said, look, man, you want to see it, either you have to come here or I have to put it on YouTube. That's the only way you can see it. So then he says, well, I talked to Jim Cornette, who's the greatest producer of wrestling TV of all time, and he says that the camera angles were wrong, that we had 14-foot pipe and drape, and that you should have been higher. And what had happened is the main camera, I had it on a jip crane, and you know, if the ring is to the top rope is 14 foot. So if a guy who's 5 foot and a half, 6 foot tall gets on the top rope, you're already over 20 foot. So no way, shape or form is 14 and a half foot drapes going to work if you don't want to show what's behind it. So he asked me, he said, can you take that white wall out of the back of the screen? And I said, no. Now, bear in mind, there were monitors. He looked at this. The TV station looked at all of this hours before we started taping. They could see every camera angle. It wasn't like what Doug was doing where they just had memory sticks. This was ran through a mixer into a computer, onto a hard drive. There were monitors. So he said, well, Jimmy says, just CGI the wall out. And I said, I'm not Sony Pictures. I can't CGI a wall out. And he said, well, can you put a bar across it? And I said, this is done in 16:9 aspect ratio. So that means that if you have a 16:9 TV, there's already going to be two bars there. So if I put another black bar, half your screen is going to be black. And by the way, if someone gets up on the top rope or takes a hip toss, not like there was a hip toss, but, you know, then they'll go underneath because the bar would be put on top. And he said, well, can't you just put like a blue bar with white stars on it? And I was like, no. And he got mad.
So he was asking me to do things that weren't possible to do.
Were not possible to do whatsoever. And so what I had suggested to Troy Lowe, who I had constant communication with, was, okay, I understand that this TV was not perfect, but let's use what we got. Let's get it on the air. It's not bad. It's not, you know, it's not raw, but it's not bad. And then at the next taping, we'll fix everything and progressively get better. So Chris gets mad, and he said, well, he started going through all the problems. Why can't you get rid of the wall? Well, because I can't do it. Well, why wasn't the camera up higher? And I said, well, because the camera wasn't up higher because I told you to go get two scaffolds, and you didn't listen. And this is where it really fell apart. He said, well, you didn't make me aware of it to where I knew I needed to have a scaffold. And I said, man, I told you, you need to get two scaffolds because I can't get the cameras high enough. Had I not brought the jib crane, you wouldn't have been able to even see inside the ring. So he said, well, they had those staging things from the armory. We could have piled those up. I said, my cameras aren't cheap. I'm not going to put a $2,000, $3,000 camera stacked on uneven wood 6-7 feet in the air on a crane just so you can get the shot to save the money.
So I got to fast forward here a bit. I get the part about that. Nothing was going to come. You guys couldn't agree, right, on how to proceed. He was not going to agree to go with what you were offering, what you had. He wanted something better to put on that first hour of TV.
He wanted me to edit it a specific way that was impossible. He wanted things removed from the film that could not be removed. He wanted things done that would have cost thousands of dollars and some other company like a Vince McMahon should have done, because in his words, Jim Cornette said so.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, at that point he started cussing me, and that's when I said, you know what, I don't need the drama, I don't need your money, I quit. And he started telling me how much money he had, and I said, I don't care. I said, basically, you know, you're not going to talk to me that way. I quit, and I hung up on him. Well, a few hours later, he calls back, threatening to sue me, threatening all this other stuff. And I said, you know, he said he paid me. Here's what he paid me for, and I want to make this very clear.
Okay.
Doug Wood was doing this whole thing for $700, so I was told. Later, I was told that he was getting $1,500. I don't know. I don't care. He paid me $200 to bring my equipment there and film it. He paid me $200 more to buy T-shirts that I printed for him with my T-shirt company. Then he was supposed to pay me $100 an episode for the finished editing of the episode. Well, he would not let me edit the episode, because he kept having all these problems. And then he said, well, why can't we just do the first episode and then do the second one next week and so on and so forth? I said, because I'm leaving, and I won't be back till April.
So the whole thing, you would have been paid $1,000, is that right?
No, I would have been paid, yes, $1,000, $100 an episode, $200 for the coming there and shooting it, and then $200 for the T-shirts he bought.
So you got $400, and then... My understanding from Mr. Lash is that you then still have the actual footage.
I do have the actual footage. I own the footage. I own the copyright on the footage.
Gotcha. Brian, this is Stephen Platinum. Something that was so interesting is when we announced that you were going to be on the show, a number of people contacted me directly, probably contacted Larry as well, wanting to rebut whatever you were going to say before you even said anything. I'm curious why you think that would be. Like, where does that come from?
Because in this business of cutthroats and cheats and guys who have very low moral standards, everybody likes to run their mouth, but they don't like to hear the truth. Here's the thing. I'm retired from the wrestling business. I'm in the film business. I run Logan's World TV. I have other interests outside of wrestling. I haven't actively competed in 2 or 3 years. Guys don't like that. They don't like the fact that I don't need to go work towns. I don't need a $5 payoff. I have my own life. And I don't care to tell people the truth. If you want to do business with me, do business with me. If you don't want to do business with me, don't do business with me. But you're not going to cuss me and push me around like a bully. And guys don't like hearing that, because the guys in the wrestling business, they're babies, and they want to have it their way all the time. Well, guess what? Life's not like that, and they don't like to hear the truth.
Well, I mean, I certainly appreciate you coming on. We have a couple of other guests we got to get to, Brian, but next week we're going to open again talking about this. If you would like to call in next week to open the show again with somebody else possibly that we might have on, you are certainly welcome to do so.
I would, and I'd be glad to do that. And if I could just say one more thing, the deal was made to air this on Logan's World TV, which is logansworldtv.com. It's on a Roku channel. This footage will be aired at some point. and it'll be aired by Logan's World TV.
Gotcha. Well, thank you. Ooh, Brian Logan, thank you very much. Obviously, much more to this story, Larry. So crazy. I understand that Miss Rachel has called in. Is that true?
We do have Miss Rachel in.
Yay. Well, let me go ahead and introduce. I assume Charles is ready to go. Let me go ahead and get him on here.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, he is the Georgia Promoter of the Year, and he promotes the two promotions that tied for Promotion of the Year, Southern Fried Championship Wrestling, and of course, the esteemed Anarchy. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Charles Anschutz. How are you doing, Charles?
I'm doing well, but I'll be damned if I'm going to get in the TV business after hearing all that shit.
Charles, I'll go ahead and open up. You're not going to get in the TV business, huh? Damn it. Not going to move to Tennessee either, I'm going to gather. Charles, I have a question for you. So you've gone from, you know, Southern Fried. Traditionally, they've done about one show a month. Sometimes they've done two a month. But now, Southern Fried's doing a number of shows a month in different locations. You're going to be at Anarchy. Do you feel like you're stretching yourself too thin, trying to be everywhere at once, trying to handle so many different things?
Absolutely not. That was the reason with the purchase of Anarchy that I wanted a partner. You know, Shane Bell and I partnered up to purchase Anarchy, and that was the exact reason, so that I would have someone to help me out. I will not be at every show in Monroe or at Anarchy. As a matter of fact, I'm stepping away from Monroe for the next few months. I will be there this Saturday night, and I probably won't be back in Monroe until June for the anniversary show to concentrate more at Anarchy. And then we're doing every other month at Royston right now. We had our opening show up there. It went really well. I was actually surprised. We've done a lot better than I thought we would. But, you know, it's a balancing act, but you put good people under you, and you trust them to do the job that they're hired and paid to do, and that's what I've done.
So with having both of them, I mean, what was your motivation to buy Anarchy, promoting it? Like you said, it's a big job that you need somebody else, and you do have Southern Fried, so what really made you take the extra step to buy Anarchy?
Well, I'm going to shoot a question back to you on that one, Rachel. First of all, I got to ask, how are you? Because I know the last time I saw you, you weren't in very good shape.
That's a little bit of an understatement. I'm still actually feeling a lot of pain in my lower back, and I think about Jeff G every day now. And
okay, well, I'm glad that you're feeling a little better. Back to the question, and responding with another question, why wouldn't I buy Anarchy? Anarchy has been the number one company in Georgia forever. The opportunity was there. I happened to be there in the building the night it was announced that Franco was selling. It's the first time I've been in that building since 1999, I believe, and all of a sudden, the one night I show up, the company's for sale. It just seemed like fate that I was there that night. And, you know, when I started my company, I did not want to, I'm not shooting for Ring of Honor like a wrestler. I'm not shooting for TNA or WWE. But I always said, maybe one day if we work hard and we learn what we're doing, maybe one day we can be as good as Anarchy. And then the opportunity was there to purchase Anarchy, and I jumped at it.
All right.
Great. Charles, this is Steve Platinum here. Before I have Larry ask a question, I wanted to ask you something. Now, you have experience. You were an announcer for football games. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I did high school football games in our area for 6 or 7 years, probably every Friday night. And then I also had a sports talk show about 15 years ago. We did a pro sports talk live show for a couple of years. And so, I've had a lot of connection with that. Sports are a big thing for me, football, baseball, basketball. But wrestling is number one.
That's awesome. I had one more question before I let Larry jump in. I was talking earlier when we were waiting for Brian to come on. I was talking earlier about how difficult the job of promoter is. That it's sort of like it's weird. You're the figurehead. You're the guy that people know. You're the money guy. But at the same time, it's sort of the job that's given the least amount of credit sometimes. What's something that you've learned as a promoter and a successful one? What's something that you've learned, kind of like a trick of the trade that wasn't taught to you, but something that you just garnered from experience of doing it?
You're not putting on a show for yourself. You're putting on a show for your fans who are paying their hard-ass earned money to come to your show. So it's not about what you want. It's not about what 20 guys and gals in the back want. It's about what those people with those asses in those seats want, and you give them what they want. You give them enough of it to keep them coming back. You leave them hanging at the end of every show, just like it's worked for 100 years. You know, you watch Gordon Solie in the 1970s, it worked. You leave them hanging at the end of the show with something to come back for, but you listen. If you notice me, anybody's been around me at my shows, you don't see me in the back hobnobbing with the guys. You don't see me hanging out. When that show starts, I'm out there. I'm watching the entire show. At Anarchy, I had a seat in the corner, outside, watching everything that goes on. I see how the crowd reacts to everything. I have my iPhone in front of me with my recorder on. I'm making notes the entire show, speaking into it. Hey, this worked. This didn't. We need to do more of this. We need to do less of this. Larry Goodman's a hell of a critic, but he's not as harsh of a critic on myself as I am. And I've got notes from the last Anarchy show, things that we need to tighten up, things we need to do better, and we will. But bottom line, back to your question, give the people what they want. If they go to Burger King, they want food from Burger King. They don't want food from somewhere else.
Gotcha. Larry, what is your question?
Along those lines, I'm curious, you know, the differences that you see perceived so far in promoting Cornelia and promoting, I guess it's, I've been pronouncing it wrong all along, being from Chicago, it's Monroe.
It's Monroe, M-U-N, Larry. Get it right, M-U-N. It might be spelled.
Yeah, I got it.
M-U-N, Monroe, Georgia.
Okay, so from what you've seen so far, though, the differences in promoting those two areas?
There are differences. It's two different type shows. Anarchy is the creme de la creme of the wrestlers in this state. Technical, those guys are sound. Those guys are awesome. They do what they do. Monroe, we've improved the product to bring a lot more of that type talent in. However, when you come to a show in Monroe, we're going to do three or four things here at night to make you laugh your ass off. You don't necessarily maybe get that at Anarchy. So what am I learning moving forward? I want to continue in Monroe to provide better action, better talent, better wrestlers at Anarchy moving forward. You need to laugh every once in a while. You need to have a little fun every once in a while. That's the two differences. It's two different styles of shows. And, you know, hopefully we can blend a little of each at each place and make both better for it.
One more question. You said you don't want to be in the TV business, but aren't you in a fashion in the TV business at Anarchy?
That was just me making a smart-ass remark because y'all had me on hold for 20 damn minutes, man. I'm having fun with you guys. You know that. Yes, the TV business at Anarchy. Bill Behrens has produced more TV than anybody in history. If you don't believe it, just ask him. He'll tell you.
And what are your thoughts on the Anarchy TV?
Bill and I have had discussions about Anarchy Television. Hopefully, we're going to put a little more money into there. I don't have much. I'm almost broke. I got just enough to get me a Big Mac and a order of fries for supper. But we're going to try to put a little more in and move forward and get that product a little better. It's good. I'd love more camera angles. I'd love a little more behind-the-scenes stuff there, and eventually down the road we'll do that. Will it happen this week, this month, this year? I don't know. But we will continue to make improvements in everything we've done. Well, hey, Larry, you missed it. We had a nice, brand-new mat for the last show. That was my first improvement to the building. We didn't have that stinky old nasty mat anymore.
Yeah, well, I'll see it next time around. Yeah, I talked to Jimmy Ox. He told me he had a new mat, brought a new mat out there. That's nice.
Well, hey,
that's awesome.
But, you know, I'm just excited about the opportunities that are there. I think that I have two companies that, while they are different, I'm dealing with two communities that are somewhat the same. You know, Monroe, Cornelia, Georgia, they're both small towns. You take people at their word. You know, people come to our shows. We got the same people in Monroe. Every show. I have a show Saturday night. I'll have 100 people by Sunday night that have already booked their tickets for the next show. And it's the same thing in Anarchy. The numbers are a little lower there, but you know what? We're going to get them up. And if you've been there at the last show instead of hobnubbing up in Tennessee, you could have seen how great the last show was in Cornelia.
Well, it certainly read like a really good show, and I did feel like I missed something, you know. And as I said on last week's show, and I wondered if you were partly responsible for this, the fact that coming into this next show, six matches were basically already known coming out of the coming out of the last show. Did you have any hand in that?
That's something that we slightly discussed. A big pet peeve of mine is going to a show and not knowing who in the hell's wrestling each other. If you put a poster out with 10 guys on there, but you don't tell me who's working who, I got nothing to get excited about. You know, I want to know who's working who, and I don't want to, you know, you advertise maybe one match. I like to get excited about what's going on. We came out of that with six matches. That card was actually set before the show even happened that night. We were already ready to roll with that, and we're going to continue to do things like that. You know, great staff up there. I'm just going to present maybe a little differing opinion from time to time and looking at things from a different set of eyes and making suggestions. Bill and I have already talked about some things. I do want to say that, Lord willing, before this year's over, we will be introducing a Anarchy, Wild Side-ish, how we name it, Hall of Fame, Cornelia, Georgia Wrestling Hall of Fame. That is something that I want to get done this year. It's long overdue, and we're going to push to get that done. We had initial discussions on that. We're looking at dates and times and trying to work schedules out to make that happen. But, you know, we're going to do some exciting things. You know, I rent that building about a month. We use it two nights a month right now. It's not getting used enough. We need to be doing some more things with it. I've got a lot of good ideas. Can't do it all at one time, but we're going to do some things. And we're going to do some things different, but we're going to continue to give you the best talent in the state of Georgia.
That is fantastic. Well, we definitely need to get Shane Knowles on here. Charles, you're welcome to hang around if you'd like. Is Shane Knowles ready to go, Larry?
He's ready.
Awesome. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is a guy who he definitely got my vote for promoter of the year. He has captained the ship at Peach State for a number of years, seen it through a number of difficult times, but the salad days are here again. And with Rick Michaels as his booker, he is a phenomenal promoter, Mr. Shane Knowles. How are you doing tonight, Shane?
Doing well, Steve. Larry, Rachel, thanks for having me on. I didn't mind waiting. I just want to say I put off my Jack LaLanne and P90X workout for this interview. So if you'll buy that, I've got some Wrestling Society X T-shirts I can sell you as well.
Shane, funny you bring that up. A friend of mine used to have a lot to do with that promotion. His name is Ryan Katz. He works for NXT now. But he still claims that Wrestling Society X, if MTV had only promoted them correctly, damn it, they would have been the biggest thing ever. He still holds on to that.
Oh, if they had just aired them, if they had 16 and Pregnant as a lead-in, I think you would have seen the ratings through the roof.
Shane, I'm going to go ahead and start this off with a question. I saw something that you had written recently on Facebook about the wrestling business, how you first got to be a fan watching Roddy Piper before he was in the WWF, how it had always been a part of your life, and how you were so proud to sort of helm your own promotion and how you came into it, you know, with ideas and enthusiasm. Now, the last couple of years have been fascinating ones for Pete, right? Up and down and having to switch venues. and deal with any number of things. Here's my question for you. There's one thing about you that I think is unique as a promoter in the state, and that is you have the ability, people adore you, and that's not necessarily unique with promoters in Georgia, but when you get in the ring, when you're part of things like you were with Tommy Too Much, it sells damn tickets, man. How hard of it is a decision when it's about you're going to get into the ring, when you're going to get involved in the action? Is the hard thing getting yourself to want to do it or to stop yourself from doing it too much? Which one is it for you?
That's a good question, Steve. I think, you know, the first time I got in the ring back in 2011, I was like anybody else, young, hungry, butterflies in the stomach. And it's funny you say that with the match with Tommy Too Much. It's almost like I had to be prodded and coaxed into it by Rick Michaels, because not like I work 3 or 4 nights a week or even 3 or 4 times a month or even a year, but it's almost like I really felt the talent roster at Peach State had improved tremendously over the last 12 to 15 months. And going with the direction we wanted to go, I didn't want to be a detriment to that or certainly stick out like a sore thumb in the ring. But it is humbling. I mean, that's honest to goodness. Knock on wood, anytime I've been involved in an angle that leads to a match, for some reason or another, there's extra seats filled at the fairgrounds in Carrollton. And that's a very humbling feeling to know that people like me and actually want to see me in the ring. I can't imagine why, but I'll just go with the flow.
Oh, I'm so mad, Steve. You took my question. I really wanted to ask about that.
That's what I do.
Yeah, but then aside from that, getting to watch you kind of work with Rick, it looked like you were pretty involved in the process of everything that happened. How was that relationship with him?
Oh, it's dynamic. I had been a promoter for 5 years, and you know, working with Mike Jackson and various other people, but I really felt like I found the perfect mix, so to speak, with Rick Michaels. And I'll just tell a quick story. I had seen Rick Michaels on some of the independent shows that I alluded to in the Facebook post, which, by the way, I'm a night owl, but to be up at 4 a.m. writing a thesis or a cathartic, you know, letter about pro wrestling, what it means to me is a little late past my schedule. But I had seen Rick Michaels in singles action as well as tag team throughout the years, and it's funny, in the fall of 2010, through Nigel Sherrod, we needed a replacement. One guy was a no-show. You know how that goes. And he said, would you mind if I brought Rick Michaels? And I knew who he was. He had no clue who I was. And that night, you know, he worked just a match. I think he went under that night. But slowly but surely, he and I started to develop a very unique, very special friendship. You know, and I don't have that with a lot of guys in the business. I have friendships. I have partnerships. But Rick Michaels and I, we share the same passion for wrestling. We came up during the same times, but we're not so old school that, oh, it has to work like this because it worked like that. Trying to adapt with the times and taking, but because not everything in the old days worked, as you know, but trying to find the best things from to lift and inspire from the old NWA, maybe from Memphis, as well as trying to use some of the, you know, the positive things that WWE TNA do. And on top of that, not just true copycats, but trying to put our own innovative twists in things. But Rick Michaels has just been a godsend for me and for Peach State Wrestling. He and I, on creativity, for example, I may call him to talk real quick for 2 minutes about something and just pitch an idea. We go back and forth, and before you know it, we spent 2.5 hours on the phone laying out things for 3 to 6 months.
Shane, I was curious about, you know, the exotic ones, of course, have been the top story, top angle, or were at Peach State for quite a long time, a couple of years at least. And then, you know, it had to come to an end eventually, and finally it culminated. How did you think about that when that was going to come to an end and you had to go to another direction? I know you and Rick must have spent a considerable time discussing that. I'm curious about your thoughts on that.
We did. You know, it still baffles me that in some way, shape, or form, four guys in a clique, in a group, in a faction, the exotic ones, for most of, I would say through 2011, except for a little six-month period, 2012, 13, 14, in some combination, the exotic ones were around the main event scene at Peach State. And to be able to wrap it up, the end of an era, match with Simon Sermon, Tommy Too Much, and to me, I thought it was perfect, because not only is that the end of their feud, but it was also the end of the calendar year for 2014, so it felt like conclusion, finality, you know, on everything, to have all the key pieces involved, Dave Wills, Stoney Hooker, Rick Michaels, all there. But it's definitely challenging, but it's one, you know, one thing Rick and I talked about, I told him, I'm looking forward to seeing if we can find the same magic with different angles, with different guys on tops, and perhaps even surpassing things that, you know, we did with the exotic ones. It's definitely a challenge that's got the creative juices flowing, because now it's almost like not starting from scratch, but it's almost like, okay, we've got to go in a different direction, and, you know, we've got to see if it's going to be a draw.
One more question. Who on your roster stands out in your mind as being a really pleasant surprise to you?
As far as someone in the ring or someone I've had the pleasure of working with? Or
ring.
In the ring, I think Ace Haven has been a unique surprise. And this it's nothing that Rick or I haven't told Ace, but, you know, for a good many years, Ace Haven was his own worst enemy sometimes in the business. But I think over the last year and a half to 2 years, you know, he's listened to what Rick and I have said. We've tried to put him in positions to be beneficial to him. I think he'll be the first to tell you he's never going to be the tallest guy in the locker room. He's certainly not going to be the heaviest. But he's got a lot of heart, and he has improved leaps and bounds over what he once was. He is our junior champion at Peach State, and some of the matches he's had with Jimmy Rave, I know Larry was high on those, and some of the other things he's done with Fry Daddy. I'm really looking forward to this Saturday as he gets the chance to take on Jeremy Foster, who another person I think has improved leaps and bounds. He hasn't been in a PWA ring since the spring of 2013, and I can only imagine that his time at Anarchy has helped him well.
Thanks.
Shane, we lied to you. There's going to be one more question from me. Here's my question. Now, we've known each other, at least by reputation, for a number of years. And this could just be – I could be completely off on this, and if I am, please correct me. But I got the feeling a couple years ago – let's call it the year that Rampage ran roughshod over the awards. I'm sure you'll remember that year as well as I do, where it seemed like everything was Rampage, and then the next year happened, which was kind of the PCW year, and then so on and so forth. And I've always got this feeling, even when you were winning Promoter of the Year, which you're always very gracious about accepting, but I always got the feeling that deep down you were angry is maybe too strong of a word, but definitely I think perhaps felt slighted that Peach State was perceived as being, as far as like in-ring and that kind of thing, a B-level show. Like it didn't get thrown in that discussion with other groups like Anarchy at the top. And am I off base on that? I mean, clearly under Rick's booking, that has changed. I think the sort of re-education of your fans has definitely happened. I think they're really happy with that sort of Peach State flavor, but with the improved in-ring. Is that something that you think about, that you and Rick worry about, is you want Peach State to be regarded as the top promotion or one of the top, not just in your fans' eyes, but in everybody else's eyes as well? Is that something that's important to you?
Wow, Steve, good question. Maybe anger is too strong of a word. I was definitely perplexed, and sometimes I still am. The recognition sometimes from your peers. I mean, with Peach State, I felt when I came to Rick and he took over as booker to work with myself, I told him my vision. I said I felt for too long Peach State has been too much entertainment and too much drama. And damn it, the posters still say it. It's still promoted as professional wrestling. I want to give them wrestling. And finding that delicate balance between still being able to tell stories and angles that get people invested in the characters, but also giving them action in the ring where it's not a bunch of walking and talking, it's actually wrestling. And we're still constantly looking for guys, additions to the roster. I know Rick and I have spoke, we haven't got around to it yet, but we've spoken about doing some recruiting trips, going to promotions in Georgia, Alabama, maybe the Carolinas, where none of us know the promoters, none of us know any of the talent on the card, and just sit back with pens, notebooks, or pull a Larry Goodman with a laptop. I don't think Rick would be all for that, but I'm certainly more electronically inclined, but sit around and just scout and look, you know, look for people to add to Peach State. But yeah, I think Rampage and Anarchy at the time, and still certainly even with Anarchy, their talent roster is fantastic, and that's something I look for Peach State to get to. I want people to look at us and say, you know what, those guys, they tell great stories, they have great, you know, well, not great, maybe they have solid payoffs to angles, conclusions, finality, but you know what, they've got some guys that are very impressive in the ring, and to be able to, you know, find that balance is certainly the, I think, the ultimate. I think probably, I don't know what everyone's vision is for your promotion, and everyone is certainly well within their rights to steer the ship how they see fit, but that's what I want. I want the angles to be there, but I want the wrestling to be there as well, where people say, okay, it's time for the final match between wrestler A and wrestler B. We know we're going to get the action that was promoted.
That's fantastic. Shane, thank you, and thank Charles for being so patient. It was a rambunctious show tonight, and I think a really good one. I would love to have Shane on again with Rick. I had this idea maybe in a month or so of doing promoters together with their bookers, and so we would love to have you on again. Phenomenal guest, and like I said, we're reaching a great place in Georgia wrestling, and I think Shane Knowles and Charles Anschutz are both at the forefront of that. So thank both of you guys for being on the show very much.
Thank you for having me. I just want to say, Charles, if you are listening, I haven't had the opportunity to make it to a show in Monroe, and I hope I pronounced that correctly. But congratulations.
You got it right, bro.
Congrats on the good work, man, and keep it up.
You're doing the same. I talked with Rick about a week ago, and you guys do a top-notch job, and I do think that we're doing all we can. I want to shoot one thing out before y'all shut out tonight. I listened for 2 years to people talk about how wrestling in Georgia was dead and how people were throwing dirt on wrestling. I like to think people like me and Shane were in the bottom of that grave, and every time people threw a shovel of dirt in there, we were throwing two or three back out. And everybody's getting on board now, and wrestling is alive and well. Everybody's doing well, or most people are, and I'm damn proud of it to be a part of it.
Well, fantastic. Next week on Tipping Point, Larry Goodman and I will be here, and so will Miss Rachel in a different capacity, because we are looking to get LaFisto, her opponent, on Valentine's Day, on the air as well. And we're going to let Rachel and LaFisto talk it out before they duke it out on the 14th. And we're also, I'm planning another surprise for Valentine's Day, maybe a wrestling couple. That's next week, Tuesday. And, of course, check out Peach State Pandemonium. Larry, that show is on Thursday, is that right?
Thursdays at 8 p.m. Correct.
Thursdays at 8 p.m. Please check out Peach State Pandemonium. And now, we didn't have time to do it earlier, so we're going to close up the show. Eric Emery, guys, unfortunately, he is attending a film festival abroad. He is a cinephile, after all. And since it's Eric Emery, he has to go via steamership. So he was unfortunately en route and could not be on for a movie review tonight. So we have another loss. Promo. Have a good night.
Welcome to the golden age of professional wrestling. Hello again, and welcome to the golden age. This week, we take a look back Setting the Wayback Machines to February 1986, Charlotte, North Carolina. Then NWA Heavyweight Champion Nature Boy Ric Flair found himself embroiled in a feud with the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. This feud proved so intense that it led to a series of prank phone calls between the two. This week, we have audio of one of those phone calls. Only on the Golden Age of Professional Wrestling.
You reached the answering machine on the Nature Boy Ric Flair. Now then, I'm not able to come to the phone right now. I'm away, riding in a limousine, or maybe a jet airplane. But if you leave your name and your number at the sound of the woo, I'll get right back to you. Woo!
Ric Flair, there's a mighty fine answering machine. Now then, sitting there at my home, convalescing from an injury. There's a knock at the door. There's a knock at the American Dream's door. Now then, I answer the door. Who is standing there, Ric Flair, but a pizza delivery man? Standing there with six pizzas, Ric Flair. Ordering pizzas to my house, Ric Flair. No party at my house. No respect. I'm spending hard times on Dusty Rhodes. I want to eat those pizzas, Ric Flair. Hard times is when you're sitting at home, minding your own business. And the pizza boy comes and he says, I got six pizzas for you, American Dream. How you gonna pay for them? Out of work. That's hard times. Ric Flair, the last thing I needed was six pizzas. One top in each. One top in each, Ric Flair. You know I'm a everything. I'm a supreme man. That's hard times. Ric Flair, vengeance will be mine. I will come for you. I will eat these pizzas. I will not enjoy them, Ric Flair. I may not look like the athlete of the day when I do, but brother, I'm gonna come get you. Bank on that. This pizza's good.
Now that's some real hatred. Next week, we'll examine audio as Tully Blanchard calls Magnum TA to ask if his refrigerator is running on the Golden Age of Professional Wrestling.
For Larry Goodman and Miss Rachel, I am Stephen Platinum. Good night from the Tipping Point.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for the latest information on upcoming events and more. As always, we thank you for your continued support.
Maybe the only vegetable Dusty Rhodes gets. Those yellow peppers is good, Ric Flair. Next week's show gonna be